Good morning. My name's T.W. Davis. I'm the lead pastor here at High Point, and we are so excited that you are here. I have a controversial take I need to share. Most leftovers don't taste as good as the original food. Don't be upset. We're allowed to disagree on some things. And here's my thought. Leftovers might look fine. They might still fill you up, but something's lost. The fries are soggy. The bread is hard. The texture's off. I get that it's still food. I get it. But it's no longer the best. All right? And if we're honest, a lot of us treat leftovers like, well, leftovers. They're optional. Okay? They're optional. They're what's left after the real meal. The thing you deal with later. Or not at all. I'm not a fan of leftovers. My wife wishes I was, but I am not. What can you do? Today we're talking about our series. We're in our series on generosity in all things. And before we talk about generosity, we need to admit some things as a group, all right? We, humans, Christians, are really good at managing appearances. Managing appearances. We are good at giving people what they expect to see. I read a story about a pastor who went to a Harley dealership to buy a motorcycle. I wish it was me. It is not. I was going to say, I guess I have to eat more leftovers for Jenny to be okay with that, but I'm going to leave it alone. She's in here. But the pastor went to the Harley store, the Harley dealership, and the salesman is giving his passionate pitch. You know, they want him to buy one. He talked about how fast it was and how it handled so well and how it could outrun almost anything on wheels. And then he said, hey, what do you do for a living, by the way? The pastor said, well, I'm a pastor. And immediately the tone changed. The salesman was like, well, it's very, very safe. It's very reliable. Because pastors aren't supposed to want those fun things, right? They're supposed to be cautious and reserved and predictable. And let's be honest, that stereotype doesn't just apply to the clergy either. It applies to Christians, people in general. Mark Twain had this really cool quote. It's terrible, but I love it. The church is where nice, respectable people go to listen to a nice, respectable person tell them how to be more nice and more respectable. It's Mark Twain's view of the church. And I get that it's an exaggeration, but exaggerations usually come from somewhere. I mean, when you turn on Christian radio, you're not hearing thrash metal. Some people don't think we can worship with loud or heavy music. You expect easy listening, safe, comfortable, nothing too disruptive. We have expectations on what faithfulness looks like too. But when you actually read the scriptures, the people that God uses rarely fit into a stereotype. They don't look impressive. They don't draw attention to themselves. They don't meet expectations. And that's exactly what's happening, what Jesus is showing us in Mark chapter 12. So if you'll turn to Mark chapter 12 in your Bible, on your app. If you don't have access to a Bible, we have some back in that corner. And if you don't have access to a Bible in your whole life, right now in your life, take it home with you. That's our gift for you. Everyone should have access to the Word of God. Faithfulness is not about what people present to the world. It's about doing what God asks, even when it doesn't look impressive. Mark 12, 41. Jesus sat down opposite the treasury and watched the people putting money into the offering box. Many rich people put in large sums, And a poor widow came and put in 2 small copper coins, which make a penny. Jesus is sitting down at the temple and he's watching people give. And that alone should slow us down, right? Jesus doesn't rush past the moment. He doesn't treat us, he doesn't treat giving as administrative or secondary. He sits, he watches, he pays attention. For Jesus, giving is not a side issue. It reveals something deeper. Now, all this is happening in the court of women, the most public place in the temple. And there are 13 offering boxes that are set around the court of women. And people are coming and they're going. Coins are dropping, some loudly, some quietly. Giving is visible. Many rich people are putting in large amounts of large sums, and they want everyone to know about it. And then Mark talks about one woman, a widow. She drops 2 small copper coins. And if you're watching with human eyes, this moment passes unnoticed. But Jesus drops everything. And he called his disciples to him and said to them, "Truly I say to you, the poor widow has put in more than all those who are contributing to the offering box. For they all contributed out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, has put everything she had, all she had to live on." Jesus calls the disciples over because he has something to say. It's not just a passing comment. It's a lesson he wants them to learn. He says, this widow has put in more money than all the others. And that sounds wrong at first. That didn't even make sense. But the only way it makes sense is if generosity is not measured by amount. Then Jesus explains it. They gave out of their abundance. She gave out of her poverty. They gave what they wouldn't miss, and she gave what she needed. God measures giving by cost, not amount. Most of us give when it feels safe, when it doesn't disrupt us, when it doesn't create tension. We give what's left over. Jesus is not impressed with leftovers. God wants us to notice who this woman is. I'm sorry, Mark wants us to notice who this woman is. She is a widow. And in the first century, widows were among the most vulnerable people in society. No steady income, no safety net, often dependent on the kindness of others just to survive. Mark adds this detail. She put in everything she had to live on. It's not reckless. That's trust. She believes that God sees her. She believes that God will provide. She believes obedience is safer than holding on. And generosity is always connected to trust. We don't struggle to give because we don't care. We struggle to give because we're afraid. Afraid there won't be enough. Afraid we will need it later. Afraid that God won't come through. There's an Old Testament story that echoes this entire truth. In 2 Samuel 24, God tells David, "I need you to build an altar." And this is where it is. That ends up being the site of Solomon's temple later. But he says, "I need you to build an altar right here." And so he goes to Arona and he says, This man owns the land, and he says, "Hey, this is what God has told me to do. On your where your threshing floor is where I need to build this altar." And Arona said to David, "Let my lord the king take and offer up what seems good to him. Here are the oxen for the burnt offering, and the threshing sledges, and the yokes of the oxen for the wood. All this, O king," Arona gives to the king. Arona said to the king, "May the Lord your God accept you." But the king said to Arona, No, but I will buy it from you for a price. I will not offer burnt offerings to the Lord my God that cost me nothing. So David bought the threshing floor and the oxen for 50 shekels of silver. I have no idea if that's a good deal or not, or if Arona was like, all right, well, if you want to pay for it, let's do this. And David built there an altar to the Lord and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings. Arona offers to give David everything he needs, the land, the animals, the wood, free of charge. And David refuses and saying, I will not offer a burnt offering to my Lord, to my God, that costs me nothing. David's understanding something that we often forget. Worship that costs nothing doesn't shape us. The widow at the temple, David on the threshing floor, they're doing the same thing. They're saying God is worth more than comfort, more than security, more than the image of looking religious. They're doing what God asks, not what people expect. Jesus watched how the people were giving. Not just what they gave, but how they gave. Jesus cares about our relationship with money because money so easily competes for our trust. How we handle money reveals what we trust. Giving is not just about funding ministry. It's about forming disciples. At this moment, we need to pause and admit something uncomfortable, right? What this woman does, giving the sort of behavior that she gives everything she has, that's not normally something we admire. She puts everything she has into the offering box, and Jesus makes it clear, even though the amount is small, she's given all that she has to live on, and that kind of action makes us nervous. Most of us are familiar with this sort of thing, parents especially, right? Your child saves up their allowance for months and months, and then on a whim spends it all on something useless they saw at the store. Or a teenager that you're teaching to be helpful and giving gives everything in their wallet to a stranger who has a convincing story that they just can't help but give. In those instances, most of the time land and end in the same way with a lecture, right? We say things like, I appreciate your heart, but you got to be smarter than that. We don't give everything away. That's not responsible with your money. Saying that to a 7-year-old? And to be fair, technically those things aren't wrong. Throwing your money at impulse purchases is irresponsible. Giving away what you need to pay rent without any thought about the consequences is irresponsible. We teach our kids, we spend a lot of time teaching our kids not to live that way because that kind of behavior usually doesn't end well. And that's why this story is so upsetting, because what we don't expect is for Jesus to praise this kind of action. Now, I'm not suggesting that Jesus celebrates being irresponsible. And I'm not suggesting that Jesus tells everyone to empty their bank account every time they feel generous. But the simple reality of this text is that Jesus holds this woman up as an example of faith. Not because the act was reckless, but because it revealed something deeper. She's a poor widow. This isn't accidental. She gives, and she now has nothing left. She's made herself completely dependent on God, and that kind of dependence makes us uncomfortable. Because we would prefer faith that is calculated, faith that is measured, faith that always leaves us in control. Last week, you had to write down some things. I asked you to write down some things that you wanted to give to God and put them on the altar. Over half of you put control. Control in some way. This is your chance. I need you to realize here that Jesus isn't admiring measured faith. He's pointing out something else here. It's a trust that God, the provider, will provide. Putting God in the position of provider, not as a backup plan. A trust that just doesn't say God is faithful, but lives as though God is faithful. Now, if you're like me, this raises some questions. Did this lady suffer? Did she lose her home? Was she able to pay rent? Who fed her? All kinds of stuff, right? And the text doesn't tell us. And I think that's intentional. Because the point of the story is not the outcome. The point of the story is the posture. Jesus isn't commending a strategy. He's revealing a heart. And this kind of upside down judgment is very typical of Jesus. Over and over again, he lifts up people and actions that don't make sense by normal standards. He consistently values trust over control. He consistently values obedience over appearances. He consistently values surrender over safety. So that brings me back to the question. Do we give God what is safe? What is calculated? Are you giving God the leftover fries? Or do you trust him enough to give him something that will actually cost you? Mark tells us the coins that she gave were lepta, two of them. Together they equal a penny. It is the smallest coin, was the smallest coin in circulation. It had almost zero purchasing power. You didn't save it. You didn't plan around it. And that helps us feel this moment more tangibly. This year, the U.S. stopped producing pennies. Not for sentimental reasons, but for practical ones. It costs more to make a penny than the penny's actually worth. Been like that for a long time. The materials, the labor, the process all exceeds the value of the coin. In other words, a penny has become economically insignificant. And that's what this woman's holding. Something most people would dismiss. Something most people wouldn't bend over and pick up off the ground if they dropped it. Yet Jesus stops and stops everything, looks at it, and says, "Look at that." Not because of what the coin could buy, but because of what it represented. These two coins were small in value, but enormous in trust. What seems insignificant to us can be sacred to God. God has always worked that way. Small things, overlooked things, faithful acts that don't impress crowds, but catch the attention of heaven. There's another way to say that what Jesus is showing us here. God measures our expression. He measures our expression of how we give thanks to him. Not by how great it looks, but how much we have to trust him in it. We all understand this when it comes to saying thank you. We tell our kids all the time, say thank you even if you don't like it. Say thank you. Say thank you. And it's not just the words. As a child, I was told a million times, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. I still hear my mom's voice when I say it, and my wife's for some reason, I just realized. And a thank you note can be the same. It can be technically correct and still feel hollow. You've probably received one that you feel like, man, that checked the boxes. It's not the words, but it's standard, and it's careless, and clear. It's clearly written because someone felt obligated, not because they were grateful. And then there's thank you notes that stay with you. Not because they're impressive, because you can tell they cost something and they mean something. I feel like I'm talking about my wife a lot today. When we got married, we had an insane number of thank you notes to write. And after the wedding, I'll be honest, I didn't want to do them right away. I mean, if we're going to be completely bluntly honest, I didn't want to do them at all. But we were heading out to our honeymoon, and in my mind, it felt like thank you notes for the wedding was something that could wait. But she insisted that we do them immediately. So we sat on the plane, flying to our connection, writing thank you notes for our wedding gifts. And not later, not when we got back, but we did it on the plane. And then during the layover in another airport, we mailed them. And I never thought a thing of it afterwards. And what surprised me was how many people commented on it afterwards. People were asking my parents, how are we getting thank you notes for our gift while they're still on their honeymoon in another country? People noticed. Not because the notes were fancy, not because the handwriting was perfect, and if you've ever received a note from me, you know that that's the case. It's because of the timing. The timing showed something. It showed gratitude that didn't wait till it was convenient. That's the kind of gratitude that Jesus is pointing to in this story. This widow's gift is that. It is not impressive. It is not large. It doesn't draw attention, but it costs her trust. Her offering is not just money in a box. It's gratitude expressed through dependence. It's worship that says, God, I am placing myself in your care. That's why Jesus doesn't measure her gift the way everyone else does. He's not counting coins. He is reading trust. He sees a heart that believes that God is worthy, and even an obedience that's risky. So that reframes generosity for us. Reframes it for us. Giving is not just about obligation and discipline. It's an expression of faith. And the question is not whether or not we should give something, but whether our actual giving requires us to trust God. Because it is possible, it is entirely possible to give generously in a way that never threatens our sense of control. It is possible to say thank you to God in ways that cost us nothing. But I hope you see that these two are not the same. So here's a question for today. Do you give God the leftovers? Or do you give God the first and the best? This applies to money. Yes. This is a sermon about giving. But it also refers to time and energy and presence and to your role in the life of the church. And as we look ahead, especially as we see God's call on us this year to push outward towards people and towards mission, I need you to hear me. Generosity, for us to do that, generosity cannot stay theoretical. God is not asking for equal amounts. He's asking for equal trust. Jesus didn't stop the crowd and praise the biggest donor. He stopped everything to point to a widow that almost everyone missed. A widow with two worthless coins, because God sees things differently than we do, and sometimes the greatest act of worship looks very small to everybody else. So what do I want from you this morning? On a sermon on generosity and money, what does that preacher want from me? I'm not asking for a number. I'm not asking for a pledge. I'm not asking for a public promise. I'm asking for you to practice trust. In a moment, we're going to respond together. in a very simple, physical way. We're going to come forward and we're going to take communion. And as you do, as you come and take communion, I want you to grab two of the pennies that are on the table. I want you to grab two pennies. I want you to take them back to your seat. The bread and the cup are going to remind us that Jesus didn't save the best for later. He didn't give leftovers. He gave himself fully. His body, his blood, not out of abundance, but out of obedience and trust in the Father. And those two pennies that I want you to grab, they're going to help you pray honestly. One penny, one of those pennies represents something that you need to let go of. Something that you've been holding on to tightly. It could be your something that gives you sense of control. Maybe it is money. Maybe it's a plan that you just can't let go of. Maybe it's an outcome that you're clinging to. Maybe it's a belief that you got to get everything together before you can come to Jesus. As you hold that penny, ask God what it represents. And ask for the courage to open your hand and not hold so tightly to whatever it is. The second penny represents something that you may be giving, but you're only giving from abundance. Something that doesn't really cost you anything. Something that looks generous on the surface, but it doesn't really require trust. And as you hold that penny, ask God if he's inviting you to give differently. Not for the sake of more, but for deeper, with dependence instead of control. You don't need to say anything out loud. You don't need to explain anything to anyone. This is not about appearances. Jesus already told us how much that matters. But as you come forward, during this next song, I want you to take communion. I want you to take two pennies. I want you to return to your seat and pray. Take a few moments to pray. Let God show you what trust looks like in your life right now. Not theoretically, practically. There's no rush. Let this be worship that costs something. Not because God needs it, but because trust shapes us. When you're ready, come forward.